Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to the Asian American and Asian Research Institute's Friday Lecture Series, online edition. My name is Anthony Wong, Program Coordinator for the Institute, and thank you for joining us. We're honored to have with us today author and journalist Samantha Chang, who will be discussing her recently released book, Honor and Duty, The Chinese American World War II Veterans, a compilation of historical records that recognizes the service and sacrifices of over 23,000 Chinese American veterans. Samantha is a broadcast veteran in national news and television production. As an experienced journalist and documentarian, she has devoted her career to raising the visibility of women in technology and the contributions of Asian American, Pacific Islander Americans in the U.S. She's a co-founder of Heritage Series, LLC, which specializes in educational programs about U.S. ethnic minorities and their contributions to American history. Recent productions by Heritage include Honor and Duty, The Mississippi Delta Chinese, a three-part documentary series, and two biographies, Dilip Singh Saud, His Life Legacy, the first Asian, Indian, and Sikh congressman in the U.S., and Norman Y. Mineta, A Boy from San Jose, the first Asian American to serve on two different presidential cabinets as Secretary of Commerce and Transportation and 10-year member of Congress, 10-term member of Congress. So without further ado, please welcome Samantha Chang.
Thank you, Anthony. It is an honor to be part of the AARI online series. And I'm very honored to be here to talk about the book, Honor and Duty, The Chinese American World War II Vets. You sent me a couple of questions, so I'll start with those. How this project got started. So this project actually, the Chinese American World War II Veterans Recognition Project began as a conversation in December of 2016. I was approached by General Tony Taguba and a couple of other generals who had learned that the U.S. Senate and the House of Representatives were about to change the requirements for a Congressional Gold Medal, that it would no longer be given to groups of people and that they were only going to consider giving a CGM to an individual. So that made me realize that we had to hurry to get this bill introduced, passed, and start working on this project. So we went to work December 2016 with an exploratory committee, a gentleman named Gil Thompson from Senator Mike Honda's office came to work with me on the project doing an exploration to see if we can garner support for a Congressional Gold Medal in the House and in the Senate. So not many people know that you need to have two members of each political party to be a co-sponsor of a bill in each of the individual houses that make up Congress. So we found actually three members in the Senate and two members in the House. So we had Senator Tammy Duckworth, we had Senator Mazie Hirono, and we had the Senator from Mississippi to support the effort in that chamber. And then in the House, we had Ed Royce, who was a representative from California, and Ted Liu, also from California. So they both sponsored the bill from the House of Representatives. Then I reached out to the National CACA to see if they wanted to partner with me on the advocacy of the bill, because, you know, these types of projects are not just a single person or a single organization. You need to have a supermajority in both House and Senate in order to have a bill as such passed. So we knew we needed help. So I reached out to the National CACA and we established a partnership. We formed the organization, the Chinese American World War II Veterans Recognition Project, and we started crafting language for the bill. And a bill is not written by one person. Please don't think that it is. It is led by one person, and that person just happened to be me, but it was written by many, many people. Many people touched this bill to make sure all of our I's were dotted and our T's were crossed, and that we would have very little opposition in both houses of Congress. Our approach to getting this bill passed was to address the Senate first, because there's only 100 senators. So we were able to reach supermajority early on in 2018. And then we tackled the House of Representatives, where we need 290 members of Congress to support this bill. So that was a very, very concerted effort. We had people coming from across the United States, coming to Washington on a regular basis. Our big push was in May of 2017 and May of 2018 with the help of the CACA. And in the months in between, we were able to organize different groups of people across the country, friends and family. We had teams coming up from Mississippi. We had teams coming in from Chicago, teams coming in from the West Coast, from all three states of the West Coast, and even from Hawaii. It was supported by a lot of organizations. So again, it takes a village to get something like this done. And fortunately, this passed by supermajority in both houses of Congress with no opposition whatsoever. And the bill was sent for signature to be passed into public law on December 20th, 2018. After that, in January of 2019, I handed off the Congressional Gold Medal activities to the Congressional Gold Medal Committee. And my team focused on the preservation and identification of the Chinese American World War II vets and their service records. Now, that in itself was incredibly difficult. So we actually started that research early on in 2018 with the assistance of Janelle Wong and her team at the University of Maryland Asian American Studies Department. We were able to identify three semesters worth of interns to work with me. And these interns were paid. So these were not interns that were just doing it for credit. Everyone gets acknowledged and no one worked for free. They either got a stipend, a travel stipend, a food stipend, or an actual stipend. So don't think that we were abusing any of our young adults on this project. The work involved in the preservation side of this book was huge. First of all, there's not one single repository that has the names of all the Chinese Americans who served in the five branches of the U.S. military and the United States Merchant Marines, which is not a branch of the U.S. military, but was conscripted into service during World War II, because World War II was huge. They were throwing people at this war. We came into the war, the United States came into the war sort of late in the game. And when we did, we were able to fight the good fight and ended the war within 5 years' time. So that said, we spent quite a bit of time at the National Archives, which is just so happens to be on the University of Maryland campus. So that was lots of fun. We would go there regularly trying to identify Chinese Americans who served in World War II on behalf of the armed forces. Sadly, because Chinese Americans were not a large community as we understand it to be now, there were under 100,000 Chinese Americans living on the mainland, and with maybe under 30,000 living in the state of Hawaii, but that was just a territory then. It was not an actual state. So finding Chinese American contribution to the war effort was very difficult. Mind you, finding the veterans themselves at the National Archives. But we persevered. We were able to find some static images about 3 to 6 months into our search at National Archives. And we learned how to obtain the data through the NARA records. So NARA, which is the National Archives Records Administration, fortunately had digitized quite a bit of their World War II documentation. Also, sadly, in 1973, there was a very large fire of the World War II collection in St. Louis, and they lost over, I want to say, 9 million documents of the World War II veterans and their service records. So that made finding Chinese Americans even more difficult. So we found ourselves having to buy into several data sets that gave us access. And thank God we did, because a substantial amount of our data came from those pay services. We were able to cross-reference our information through published documents, books, physical books, of which we had a core book collection of about 20 publications that had World War II, Chinese American World War II participation in it. So we were able to create individual data sets based on those primary sources, and then kept them all disparate as we continued to search through more traditional means of identifying service records. So we worked with the American Monument Battlements Commission to review the headstones of the lost members of our service men and women. And we went through all of their records and identified the Chinese Americans. We actually did a search by identifying 621 Chinese Americans by their last name, created a simple algorithm that was written for us by a University of Maryland student named Tony Liang, who has gone on to be a professional data specialist for another firm in California. And that became the spine of our data, was the NARA records with the 621 Chinese sounding last names in the context of the 1940s. So some of the hurdles in the research were the fact that the Chinese in the United States at the onset of World War II was a bachelor society. And many of the Chinese men who were living here came as paper sons because there was no clear path to citizenship. So that's what made this recognition even that much more important to capture and categorize before we lose these documents. NARA had already lost 9 million of World War II service records, and using the common Chinese last names became the spine, cross-referencing that with paid service versus NARA service and our primary source disparate data sets. It became quite a large endeavor on our part, but we were very, very blessed to have had the wherewithal to make all of this happen. We were also very fortunate that a nonprofit here in the area called AmeriVision believed very much in this project and underwrote a substantial amount of the publication of these documents, but certainly not the research that actually came out of my 401k. But the hurdles in the research were the fact that we had to there was a standard of protocol and methodologies that we established early on in the project that we didn't expect any Chinese American World War II vet to say, I served, but we can't find your records. We don't expect them to lie. So we took it at face value, and then we took it upon ourselves to research their service based on the information they provided us. We did intake events throughout the country. We went up to Boston. We went up to out to Chicago. I was up to in New York several times. In fact, we basically parked ourselves out of the American Legion post 1291, which is the Kim Lao post in New York's Chinatown. And we did quite a bit of our research up there, going through their membership cards and their databases. And we did that as well as at the other large Chinese American centric Veterans of Foreign Wars and the American Legions. So the cities we visited were Boston, Philadelphia, New York, Washington, D.C., Chicago, Texas, Seattle, Oregon, San Francisco, San Diego, and Honolulu. So we feel very, very confident that we got the bulk of the Chinese Americans who served. We actually even went to cemeteries, took photographs of tombstones. We went through online archives, through obituaries of Chinese newspapers. We did a very thorough search. And the final number at the time of publication was 22,827 World War II vets of Chinese American descent. Since we published at the beginning of November, and it's only today is only the 18th, we have actually identified, gosh, another 25 that were not part of our original search, as well as I know personally that there are about at least 250, maybe 500 veterans that we did not count from New York because we just ran out of time in terms of scanning membership documentation at the Kim Lao Post and also in Hawaii, where we were not able to finish capturing the tombstones at Punch Bowl. And Punch Bowl is part of the national cemeteries. So you can't be buried in a national cemetery unless you served in a specific war. You have to provide documentation to the American Battlement Commission and in order to be given permission to be buried there. So we know that we are still missing many, many Chinese Americans, and we will, although there will not be a second edition to this book, there will be an online resource that we are currently developing in the stage of development, and we hope to have that online resource up and running by 2023. We are working with the University of Virginia to make that available. It's not a matter of just throwing things up on the internet. It's not that simple. There's a lot of academic protocol and guidelines that one must follow. We want this to be an irrefutable collection. We don't want anyone to ever say Chinese Americans did not serve and that they have no right to be Americans. We are as American as anyone else. We just look a little different. Okay. So that's the book. So if you're interested in purchasing this book, which is really more of an academic book, or someone, if you have military interests, you will find great interest in this. It's about 100 pages of narrative and 1,000 pages of research. So it's not small, it's very large. And it weighs about 5 pounds. So if you'd like, and if you're interested in a copy of this book, you can go to www.heritageseries.us. That's www.heritageseries.us. I think I should talk a little bit about the Congressional Gold Medal, even though I handed off that process to the generals and the Congressional Gold Medal Committee. That's part of the national CACA. There will be a virtual ceremony honoring the Chinese American World War II vets on December 9th, being held virtually from Washington, D.C. at, I believe it's coming out of Nancy Pelosi's office, but I do not know. But that said, you can go to www.caww2.org and make a query there. There's some information on that website that will take you to registration for this event. I have nothing to do with the verification of the service records. We just handed off of our data to the committee, and we hope that everyone will be included that has been included in our book. So that said, if you have any questions for me, you can reach me via email at e.samantha, S-A-M-A-N-T-H-A, dot Cheng, C-H-E-N-G, at gmail.com. Thank you very, very much. If you have any questions, please feel free to reach out to me. If we have omitted your loved one, it was not intentional. We will rectify that in the online resource. However, that said, if we find that we need to do a second edition, we will, although I prefer not to. So thank you again. And if you have any questions, I look forward to seeing you in email.
In terms of your research, what interesting facts did you find out about Chinese American veterans?
We found that 61 Chinese Americans served. Chinese American women served. Now that's really interesting because we were a bachelor society, so that makes sense. The numbers do not lie. When you look at the figures, I mean, I'm not a statistician, but if you look at the figures in the 1940 census, where a lot of our benchmarks started, I mean, I didn't speak to K. Scott Wong's being our advisor. Okay, I didn't want to do the competing university thing. So we talked about the University of Maryland, and I was cool with that. But K. Scott Wong was my advisor for the Chinese American, the Honor and Duty Mississippi Delta Chinese. And I asked him to advise us for this project at the beginning, which he accepted. And his research led us to believe that there were only 12,000 Chinese Americans who served in World War II. And that's based on his findings of his book, Americans First. As we continued with our research in 2017, the numbers just started to grow after we did that first poll of 621 common Chinese last names. We're like, holy cow, there are more than 12,000. We're leaning towards 14, and then it would grow again. Then we're growing 16,000, and then it'll grow again. We went to 18,000. And then I went, holy cow, there's more. There's just a lot more. Then we started keeping the number close to our chest. We didn't want to share that because you don't want to publish something and then be wrong. Okay. Because even though you find all these names, you have to do all sorts of due diligence, like remove all the duplicates, because the names were entered in the Western format and not the Eastern format. That also became very confusing because the veterans wanted to be called by their name. And when they were asked what their name was, they would say, okay, so my name is Jiang Yunfan. And that's how they'd say it. Oh, I'm Jiang Yunfan. But that's not real. So the Yunfan would, I mean, it would just, everything got turned around because of the Eastern way of writing your name versus the Western way of writing your name. Additionally, we had so many aliases that we had to contend with. So if someone was, so we've we established these protocols and methodologies right from the start. Like, we would only use how the military records are written. That would be the principal way of presentation. We would then do parentheticals with the aliases. Fortunately, we didn't have that many aliases. We only have maybe 1,000 out of the 22,000. We have about 1,000 aliases, and we were able to match them to the right veteran, the correct veteran. So that was quite exciting. The research into the women who served, and then identifying, you know, how come we only had 2 Chinese in the WASPs? And then in actuality, according to the military records, there's only 1, which is Maggie G, which is Margaret Maggie G. But there was Hazel Ying Lee, who is a Gold Star family. She is a veteran who died in service as a women's pilot, part of the Air Force. And she died flying from point A to point B in service. And her records were lost in St. Louis. So we had to backtrack and go find other sources so we can include her in this book, because we know that she served, and she served as a WASP. And then finding the women who served in the Army Corps. So that means the Women's Army Corps. And locating that data. So in the NARA records, you're not differentiated by sex. So you just sort of have to gauge, you know, like, okay, Kimberly is a male or female name. Robin is a male or female name. You know, they cross gender. So we had to really dig and dig and dig and dig. We relied heavily on 2 critical books, one written by Murray Lee and another written by, that was released by the Southern California Chinese Association, the Southern California Chinese Historical Society. It was called Duty and Honor. That book was so instrumental in our research. Then we had another blessing, which is phenomenal. There was a singing group out of San Francisco called the Chick Char. I have no idea what Chick Char means. I think it's like a bird. We had the book translated. It's a book that was written in Chinese, and it had pictures. It started as a singing club in the 1930s, and then because everybody in that club ended up serving in World War II, it became this unbelievable primary source resource, because it had photographs, names, first name, last name, a photograph in uniform, so we could figure out which branch of service they served. And then we were able to then go into our databases and try to discover their service records. So that was a true blessing, because, gosh, the Chick Char book is amazing. In fact, I want to dismantle it as part of the online resource, because it has so much rich history.
Nice.
And we will take care of that. That's already out of copyright, and the ownership of that book, the club has since disbanded. So that is public domain at this juncture. But we want to attribute where we can and where it's appropriate.
Nice.
Other interesting finds were, you know, the branch of service people served in, you know, they were mostly Army. The predominant number of Chinese Americans served in the U.S. Army. And then we learned some other things, like if you served in the Navy, you can only be a mess steward for the first 2 years of the war. If you were Chinese, you worked in the kitchen. You were a server or a busman, but you were called a mess steward. In 1943, when the law changed in the U.S. Navy, you can then be promoted to a petty officer. But very few went above and became commissioned officers. we were very, very excited to find a gentleman named Dr. Edwin Al Yang, a surgeon from Northern California. We were in the National Archives, and I want to say the later part of the first spring semester at the University of Maryland. We were looking through photographs, static images of, you know, Chinese Americans, and that, and there was a lot of confusion because China was our ally and they were sending American soldiers. So the search words were Chinese American. We had to sift through all that crap. It was crazy. But we found a photo of the first commissioned officer. His name was Dr. Edwin Al Yang. He got his Purple Heart in CBI. And he was commissioned as a major, and there were no others like him. He was few and far between. I think the highest ranking officer we found after that was a first lieutenant in the Army. So there are some really interesting pieces of information. You know, we broke out the branch of service. We broke out where people were born. We had to make certain modifications or adjustments to how we presented the data, but that's all explained in the book, because in the world of academia, you don't ever want an academic to call you out saying, you did this wrong. So we're we explained everything. This was all of our methodology.
I think there was an interesting thing in your research where you found out that there were a lot of servicemen that came from Idaho.
Now that was really fun, because when we're advocating for the bill, we're like, how come there are like so many Chinese people in Idaho? Even in all of my other research as a filmmaker, as a documentarian, I couldn't figure out how there were that many Chinese people in Idaho. So we called around, we asked historians, we talked to everybody who would talk to us or even listen to us. And the conclusion was Hawaii was not a state in 1941 and did not become a state until 1959. But there were so many Chinese in the state of, in the Commonwealth or the territory of Hawaii. And they all enlisted. Where do you put them on paper? You can't put them in a state, and you can't put them in the territory. They eventually became in the territory, but that didn't happen until 1943. So prior to 1943, these people were put into, just on paper, their names and service records were parked in the state of Idaho. 2,200 and some odd Chinese Americans from Hawaii were listed as if they were from Idaho as their state of residence.
I see.
So that was really interesting. We were very, very lucky and blessed to find these really interesting anomalies in the data. And it's explained, and we'll find some more as we continue doing more research into this. But this book is the only, it's a compendium. It's a collection of data, and it's in one place. This is the only place that all of the names of the Chinese Americans who served are listed. So it's broken out by state. It's done last name first in alphabetical order. We give data points, which is first name, last. So the names are presented by the way that they are listed in the military record, which is their last name, first name, middle initial or middle name. We provide their serial number, their branch of service. Now, again, only 5 branches of U.S. Armed Forces and the U.S. Merchant Marines, which are not part of the U.S. Armed Forces. We provide their rank, their date of enlistment, their year of birth, their place of birth, which is very fascinating, their race or ethnicity, nativity, and their citizenship. We also found some interesting anomalies, like after the the communist takeover in Russia, or when the white Russians were chased out of Russia, out of Moscow in the 1917, a lot of Russians went to China and had their children in China before they could go back to Russia, or, you know, diaspora to other places in the world. And we had hundreds of Chinese, of white Russians who were born in China, who served in the US Armed Forces during World War II. And we had to eliminate them from our data. So I think an interesting point of view that we will provide in the online resource is we will go back and say, there were this many Russians or this many Slavic nation people who served in World War II and were registered as Chinese because they were born in China. So there are interesting facts like that.
Well,
I could go on for days. You don't want me to go on for days, Anthony.
No, that's fine. Thank you very much for making this presentation. What's the cost of the book, actually?
You could buy this book for the low price of $99.99.
So I understand that the discount price is already unavailable on the Heritage.
Yeah, sadly, the way that we were able to work this out with the distributor was we could do a pre-publication sale at a 30% discount, and then that had to go off. So the street date of this book was November 11th, which was Veterans Day, and we had to close that at midnight on that day. So,
not a problem. So that ends our official recording. Thank you very much, Samantha, for making this presentation to us, and we hope that people pick up the book, research and read it, and learn about, you know, the sacrifices that these...
it's a great source of pride for every Chinese American, because if it was not for this generation, we would not be here. Please, that is so important, especially for people who are coming into the United States since the 1990s to now, who just make these assumptions that Chinese Americans were always welcome into the United States. That is not true. Okay. And if it was not for this generation of Chinese Americans, we would not all be here. Thank you, Anthony. Yep. Thank you so much. This was very enjoyable, very unique. You know, I didn't realize it was going to be this way, but I'm glad. And it was a very good experience for me. And I look forward to the end of this pandemic so I can meet you in person. And I'll be in touch about the online resource